TFM.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Mar Talker on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he always is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. And Matthew, if you're ready to get this podcast started, just go ahead and enter the access code.
I didn't know there was going to be a code. Chris, I don't know it.
I mean, you should be fine. You've got at least level 7 Cardassian access codes, right?
I only have number 6. Apparently somebody is more valuable than I am.
Really? Really? Well, if you'd like a level 7, I'm sure we could arrange something.
Mm-hmm. What's this going to cost me?
I'll make you a good deal. Maybe,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what you said last time, and I still don't have a shirt.
You still don't have a shirt, but you've got 17 crates of self-sealing stem bolts.
Yeah, yeah. It's more awkward than you would think, not having a shirt.
All right. So today, everyone, we're going to talk about the episode Civil Defense, but we're going to talk about mainly one aspect of it, which is Gul Dukat and how the episode... It's not really a turning point per se for the character, but it's like a shift in tone, giving Dukat a little bit more of a sinister feel. What did you think about that, Matthew? Is that a fair way to kind of characterize him in this episode?
Yeah, I mean, so one of the things that I was really struck by, because, you know, I've been doing a slow rewatch through Deep Space Nine, and I just, you know, happened upon this episode the other night, and you know, it's kind of fun to go back to these episodes, I think, especially in like season 2, 3, where I don't feel like we get as much play in those seasons. You know, people just kind of forget that those seasons exist until Way of the Warrior happens. Yeah. And it's a disappointment because so much character development happens in especially season 2 and I think season 3. And what's crazy is that Dukat is only in 3 episodes of season 3. And he's actually only in 3 episodes of season 4, even though, of course, Way of the Warrior is a 2-parter. And so, you know, he's not really in these seasons very much. And so what's so fascinating to me about this, and one of the things that we were talking about behind the scenes was really, I think this episode perfectly encapsulates the way in which Dukat is an opportunist. And he's always looking for the ways in which he can benefit himself depending on whatever situation he's in. And what I really was caught off guard by, again, rewatching this episode, is the way in which, you know, he beams on to the station and he's really not willing to help them. Like, he sees this as that he has the complete upper hand, and basically he's going to be able to get whatever he wants out of this. And we really truly see, I think, his true colors for the first time in the entire series so far.
Right.
Which is, yeah, if he feels like there is nothing to gain by being, you know, kind or you know, gentle or any of those type of things, he will just be what he actually is, which is a downright villain. And so I feel like, and I could be wrong, But I feel like this might be the first time we really get a true hint of just how devious
right.
this character is.
Yeah, that's kind of my feeling about it and why I said it's kind of a shift in tone that gives us the character that we come to know later on. Because prior to this, he's only been in Counting the Maquis as two episodes, which of course it is two parts, but I always think of it as one story. Counting it that way, he's only been in seven episodes before this since the beginning of the series. And an emissary, he's necessary for establishing the story and kind of letting Sisko know the background of Bajor and letting us know that, you know, through those interactions. So he plays that role there. And then the other times we see him up to this point, I don't feel like he's not as devious, like you said, as we think of him as being when we think of Dukat. And so this is the moment, and it's the first time he appears in season three, and it's the first time that he has appeared since the Maquis in season two. And so it does feel like they decided to kind of beef him up a little bit, make him more devious, make him more opportunistic, like you said. They introduce the his kind of desire for Kira in this episode as well. And they also really establish that animosity between Dukat and Garrick, which is going to be very important as the series plays along. So that's why I feel like this is a quite important episode for Dukat.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, I really just truly come back to the fact that this is his first time to feel as though there is no wiggle room. Like, the characters that he's facing have no choice but to acquiesce to whatever it is that he desires.
Yeah.
And so we finally, I think, truly are able to peel back the layers of the Cardassian onion to see what it is that Dukat desires. And what he really wants is basically his old job back. He wants things to go back to the way that the occupation were. And so this is one of those beautiful moments where a character finally kind of reveals who they truly are to you. And anything that they do beyond this is, I think, in many ways, kind of covering up the fact that he had revealed this here and trying to ameliorate that in some way. But this, I think, clearly shows exactly where this character is going to go in the very end of the series, which is this is always going to be the character who is behind the scenes, always doing what he needs to do to get what he wants for himself. And he really just doesn't care about anybody else.
Yeah. Well, you said he wants things to be the way they were before. He wants his job back. And I think the core to it all, though, is what you're describing, in that he wants to be up on the pedestal. He wants to be the center of everything at the top. Everyone is idolizing him, rather than it necessarily being and maybe I'm wrong here, but rather than it being that he wants to specifically occupy Bajor, or he wants to restore the occupation of Bajor, or he wants to eliminate the Bajoran people or anything like that, I think it's more just that he wants to have the power, which is what you see in this episode where, you know, he could help them. And he says, yeah, I'll shut it off in good time, but he wants to watch everybody squirm first because that makes him feel more powerful. And in the messages, now, of course, I wouldn't necessarily take him at face value on what he says, but as he's talking to the Bajoran slaves in the messages that play, as the different levels of the counterinsurgency program play out, he tells them that Cardassian security will come, you'll surrender to them, but you won't be harmed, and you have my word on that. And it sounds like he's trying to be kind, but even if he's being honest that they're not going to harm the insurrectionists, by promising not to do that, he's still trying to be the person that everyone has to idolize mm-hmm. and look up to and beg at the feet of, right? So that's what drives mm-hmm. him from this point for sure forward throughout mm-hmm. the rest of the Deep Space Nine story.
Yeah, there's this real testament to the character of Dukat and who he is, which is that he wants people to love him.
Yeah, yeah.
Right? But here in this episode, we actually see less of that because he believes he has the upper hand again.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, he is not required or does not feel that he is required to show that side because they don't have a choice. And like, I think the way I might put this is just that the mask finally slips. And what we see underneath is really ugly, this character. And truly is a villain, you know. And I think, you know, there was this whole side of fandom, I think, especially throughout Deep Space Nine's run, and even as people have done rewatches and stuff, and you've seen in podcasts or had arguments, and people have got really upset at the end that Dukat became an all-out villain.
Mm-hmm.
But I would argue that Civil Defense actually shows us that he always was an all-out villain.
Yeah, it's a good
he
point.
Just covers it up with lots of layers of you know, cosmetics and niceties and pretending to care, and yet what's really underneath is ugly. So I really think that this episode, you know, you mentioned at the beginning, maybe it's not quite a turning point, but the more I think about this episode, the more this actually might be one of the most important episodes for this character of the entire series, mm-hmm. because we truly do get to see evil's face.
Yeah. And we see it in a natural situation. It's not like the writers
mm-hmm.
suddenly made him this way for a particular story later on where it was really necessary for some drawn out plot or, you know, the relationship he ultimately has with Sisko. But it is just a situation where, well, first of all, the situation mm-hmm. itself is not new. In fact, even on DS9, it's the second time that something like this has been triggered on the station because there's the virus in Babel that makes everybody say crazy things.
Yes. Yep.
And it's also not new in Star Trek. You've got like worst case scenario on Voyager with the, with Tuvok's holodeck program about what mm-hmm. they would do if there is a mutiny, and elsewhere in the franchise, you'll see situations like this. So they used a familiar situation that is a bottle show type plot as an opportunity to lift the veil on the character and show us his true nature so that they can use him that way as the story unfolds later. So I think that worked mm-hmm. quite well in that sense. It's interesting that you brought up fan reaction to how Dukat is written, portrayed late in the series, because it's never bothered me, but I have always recognized the fact that he becomes a much more two-dimensional character in the final season compared with the way that he was through most of the, especially the season 5 forward stories. And I don't know, like, I've always kind of wished that he remained a more complex villain like he was earlier,
mm-hmm.
but I don't know if the story that was playing out in season 7, which was very much this good versus evil type story, very familiar story between him and Sisko and what they represented between the prophets and the Pah Wraiths and so forth. I don't know if that would have worked as well had they continued to write him the way that they were writing him in season 5 and 6. I don't know. What do you think about that?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think again, this episode helps make sense of the fact that he becomes perceived as a more complicated character.
Mm-hmm.
But in all reality, I feel like this episode helps us see how that truly what was underneath was a character who's just really willing to do whatever it takes to get what he wants, mm-hmm. which is power.
Yeah.
And so the complicated nature comes from the fact that he looks as though he's willing to be, quote unquote, a nicer character or look like he's changed if that's going to get him in the good graces of people and help him have more power, which I think really actually goes to one of the things that you mentioned about this at the beginning as well, which is this is a place where we clearly have called out that Dukat kind of has a thing for Kira.
Yeah.
And we've talked about that before, but this is an episode where Garrick calls him out on it and he becomes quite embarrassed by it. But it is something to which you can clearly see in this episode that he's kind of preening towards Kira, trying to get her to kind of see him in a specific light. And what's so interesting about that is that in Civil Defense, he's already ruined any opportunity of that by not helping them right away. And so he's so delusional. He's so like in his own little created world of his image, he can't see that there's just no way that that's ever going to be a thing because he's ruined it time and time again by showing her who he really is. And I think to me, that's the other thing that makes him, I don't know, you could call complicated, but he truly is a person who lives in his own reality. Like, and his reality creation is that he is just this amazing person that everybody should love. And, you know, that's not how the rest of the world sees him.
Right, right. Yeah. Well, I think in his mind, he probably thinks that by not helping, dragging it out, and then saving them at the end, that somehow Kira would be blown away by that and enamored by him, and that would work. And it's interesting when you rewatch the series, the fact that he's showing hints now that he has this interest in Kira here in season 3, and this is long before we find out anything about the fact that he had something with Kira's mother all those years ago on Terok Nur, and that there's this like thread, I guess, running through his attraction to her through it's, you know, it becomes very weird and creepy aspect of his character and his time during the occupation. Let me ask you something else then. What I've always found, because of what we're talking about here, I want to ask, I've always found it really odd how a lot of people have expressed attraction to Dukat.
I don't know what to chalk that up to other than the fact that what is so fascinating about him as a character is that he sees himself as a person who's just misunderstood, and that if people just really knew him, that they would love him.
Mm-hmm.
And yet the problem is that he doesn't realize is that we really know him and we don't love him, you know?
Yeah.
So, and I think that's the thing. And that's where I'm just really, you know, we've talked so many times about how, you know, Deep Space Nine continues to be more and more relevant as the years go by. And this is a place where I think that Deep Space Nine kind of hits the nail on the head for where we are in the year 2022 as we're recording this, that we live in a society where people legitimately think that they can create their own little worlds and what they think is what is reality.
Yeah.
And yet what we see here is that that's not how it goes. You know, that's not how it works. And to me, I find that so fascinating about the character. And I don't know why people might respond to that in a way that would be positive. So I would be really interested. Maybe somebody will write us on Twitter or the Babel Conference or something, and let us know, because I would be fascinated to kind of understand the thought process behind, you know, thinking that Dukat is a character that, say, quote unquote, could be trusted, that you could like in that way, because I don't understand it, because I've never seen him as anything but a villain. I was basically never fooled.
Yeah. It is interesting how a lot of people have expressed attraction to Dukat, and it always puzzled me. But you know, even other Cardassians didn't trust him, and I think that's something that also he couldn't really wrap his mind around. But I love the twist in the story when Legget Kel comes on the recording and tells Dukat that, hey, sorry, but you've lost control. You've tried to abandon your post, and you've lost control, and you're disgracing yourself and Cardassia, and your attempt to escape is no doubt a final act of cowardice. And you know that's something that Dukat could never imagine about himself, that he has cowardice in the first place, and that anyone... I think people like Dukat, the idea that there is anyone else who could even call them out on something is, as Dukat says here, outrageous. Like, that's just something that cannot happen. And that twist of the story, I thought, not only was interesting, but it further... To show the character the way they do in the story, you need to have him fall during the story, right? So having him be put in a position where actually he has to rely on the others to ultimately save him also adds some interesting layers to the character for me.
Yeah, I think I really like that you brought that up, because I think that's another piece of the character that we see is that, yes, he is completely opportunistic, and that means that he is a coward. He doesn't actually truly stand for anything but himself and self-preservation. And what I love is that he is called out in that, and that it's something that the high command of the Cardassians understood back in the day. They what's interesting is that, again, as we're looking at this episode, they knew who he was. And so they had even planned contingencies for what would happen if Dukat did what they knew he would do. And so not only do they know that he's a coward and an opportunist, but I think they also know that even for a Cardassian, he's not a good guy, quote unquote. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, I think
because he would abandon his post, which is completely against type for Cardassians, which are supposed to believe in the state.
Well, yeah. Although that's another of those Star Trek monoliths of cultural monoliths. Obviously, not all Cardassians would be buying into that.
Yes.
And there would be Cardassians.
And we see that throughout the series.
And we see that throughout the series, right? Yeah. But at this point, we haven't really seen that, right? That at this point, we're seeing Cardassians as being more like Klingons or Romulans, or with the exception of Garak, we aren't seeing people speak out against the government or the society or anything as much yet. So at this point, it's perfectly a fair observation to say that Cardassians all believe in the state. But I think for Cardassians looking at him, just like us looking at humans in the world today, they can see through that wall that he's putting up, that kind of mirage that he's putting up to try to be this different person. You know, you can easily see through that. And I think that, again, as would be the case in the world today, in a situation with governments or military organizations or anything, you don't necessarily get rid of those people, but you do keep a close eye on them and you do put safeguards in place in case they do something. And that's exactly what we see here.
Yes. And I think you just absolutely nailed it in calling it a mirage. I mean, what Dukat is all facade.
Yeah.
You know, and
oh, they should have had a character called Gull Facade. That would have been great.
I mean, maybe a little too much on the nose, but 100%, I agree with you. That would have been great.
Yeah.
Well, Chris, one more thing that I was really struck by, too, and again, you had so well encapsulated this episode at the beginning, which is that this is also a place where we see Dukat's true feelings about Garak in the sense that he hates him and he wished he had killed him earlier. You know, like, he wishes he was dead.
Yeah. And Garak wishes he had killed Dukat, and I was thinking that there are billions of people in the Alpha and Beta quadrants who also wish that you had done that when you had the opportunity, because...
The feeling is mutual.
Yeah, because things would have certainly turned out different down the road if you had taken that opportunity. But I do like this aspect of the story, just in that it really ramps up Garak's background and the fact that they did have these past connections, and it's like laying the groundwork for being able to really tell very interesting stories involving these two characters and others, like when you bring Zial into the story later on.
Yeah.
And this is maybe not exclusively the point where we get this information, but it's very much one of the foundational stories for the Dukat-Garak relationship.
Yep.
And yet it is an episode that I think kind of gets forgotten quite often, or it's remembered for the series of escalating countermeasures against an insurgency. I remember when we talked about this episode on the Ready Room years ago, and I don't remember the exact title anymore, but it's something like, in 2 minutes, we'll release the Badgers. Because it's just like, they keep trying something new and something new, and it's not working. And so ultimately, and what I'm really thinking of there is Mr. Burns on The Simpsons, you know, releasing the hounds.
Yes, yes. Yeah, no, I think you're 100% right in that. And, you know, this is... What's really great, I think, about this episode is there's, I think people just kind of pass over the series till season 4. And it's again, I really do think it's to their detriment to do so. Because I think everything that comes in the later seasons, for the most part, is truly built out of all of the work that they had put into these first few seasons. I just really appreciate that. And this is definitely one of those episodes where everything that we're going to see later on for this character, especially as of Dukat, is going to play out later. And I think they just do a really, really good job with that. And, you know, I'm impressed. I really am. With the writer's ability to kind of pull out these things and then to use them. And I think they just do a very, very good job of this. And so it's really, really well done. And again, I think it makes the character of Dukat so much more interesting, because like you said, there is this continual layering of character. But I think what we see here is that the underlying layer to the very, very end here is one that's ugly. And it's character that honestly is completely and utterly unlikable in every way, shape, and form. Not one that you should like, you know? And I think they give us all the reasons on why that should be the case. So it's a great, it really is. I think it's just a great episode, but mainly here for what it does. And we, I mean, gosh, we could do a whole other episode, you know, just about what this does for even the, like the relationship between Odo and Quark, because mm-hmm. this is another episode where it kind of build on that layer, you know? So
yeah.
just for focusing though on Dukat, I think it's phenomenal.
Yeah, it is. And helps them develop one of, I think, the best villains in all of Star Trek.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I would say, you know, it's funny because I think there was a, right now as we're recording, there was one of those like head-to-heads with villains mm-hmm. for Star Trek, and it was Dukat and Q. Mm-hmm. And I think that Dukat is the better villain than Q. I do think there's so much more to him.
Yeah. And see, I don't even really think of Q as a villain. But maybe that's for another discussion as well.
Yeah, I think that probably is.
I think of him as a foil or an adversary, maybe, but a villain, like a really bad person, or is Dukat.
Yeah,
Khan.
Yep, 100%.
You know, these are villains, and mm-hmm. yeah, definitely. Just to wrap up, you mentioned people shouldn't overlook these earlier episodes because of what they do for so many characters and relationships and other elements of the series, and even bits which on which later stories are built. And you mentioned the Quark Odo thing here, and you know, this is the first time Quark mentions his cousin Gayla, who has a moon. And then when you think about Quark, if you're a Niner and you've watched DS9 a lot, and you said, hey, tell me something about Quark and his family, probably you're going to say, well, he's got this cousin that owns a moon, right? That's something that people remember. Mm-hmm. And it's just dropped in here, not only in the conversation, but even at the end, when Odo's rattling off people who are more devious yeah. than Quark. And he says,
yep.
Gayla, and Quark says, oh, the one with the moon? So yeah. those little touches also I love, and it is a reason why, even in an episode that on the surface feels somewhat like a rehash because you've got a malfunction that's life-threatening, someone has tripped a defense mechanism and they have to find a way out of it, go back and watch these stories, look for the little elements. And in this case, yeah. watch it for Dukat's foundational mm-hmm. emergence here in season 3.
Well, and just to add one more thing to that, which is, you know, I'm constantly surprised about how many of the episodes you can watch just for one character's
yeah, yeah.
character development.
Yeah.
And so I feel like, you know, so many of the episodes, especially with the main cast, you know, that has their name on the screen at the beginning, you can watch almost every single episode and you could watch the way that episode adds something to their character growth. Mm-hmm. And so that means you could watch this show that many times
mm-hmm.
just for those characters.
Yeah.
But then you could do that for a lot of the side characters too.
Right.
And I think that's what makes this show so deep and so rich and so much fun for us to be able to continue, you know, to talk about. So, yeah, and I mean, I think as we're recording too, Chris, I think 2023 is the 35th year, 30th year?
Yeah, well, it'd be the 30th, yeah, because
30th year, yeah, I don't do math, yeah. So yeah, that's crazy to me. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I can't wait to celebrate that soon.
Yep, that's going to be fun. All right, everyone. Well, we would love to hear your thoughts on Gul Dukat. I know you have some, so please share them with your fellow listeners and with Matthew and me. The best way to do that and get a conversation going is to go to the Babel Conference on Facebook. That is our listeners group. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field if you're looking for it for the first time. If it doesn't come up, type the whole name, the Babel Conference. It is a closed group, so if you're joining, please answer the questions and agree to the rules of the forum so that I can let you in. And then you'll see a post for this episode there on the timeline, and you can add your comments there and share again with your fellow listeners. And then Matthew and I are in there also. If you'd like to share your thoughts by email, you can do that by going to our website, trek.fm/contact, choose to send to a show and choose the orb, and that will come to us by email. And you can find us in social media. Our username everywhere is TrekFM. And if your podcast app of choice allows you to leave a rating and a review, we would love to get that from you as well. Let us know what you think about the show and let others who are looking for Deep Space Nine podcasts know if they should listen. Now, Matthew, when you're not crawling through small tubes trying to unlock magnetically sealed doors around your house, where can people find you?
Well, Chris, thankfully, we don't have too many of those, so it doesn't take too long. But if you want to find me, you can find me all over the place under the name MattRushing02, all over social media, Twitter, Instagram, Letterboxd, Vero. Of course, here on the network, we've got a whole side of the network not devoted to Star Trek. All the other fans we love, you can find in the 602 Club, and we do hope you'll join us there. Of course, you can also find me doing literary tracks, talking about the books and the comics of Star Trek. Chris, you and I talk about Star Trek Enterprise over on Warp 5, as we're going through every single episode in celebration of it being over 20 years ago now. Of course, we got Saddle Up about Strange New Worlds and The Artificial Tango about Star Trek Picard. And then over on the Nerd Party Network, you will find me doing a couple of shows. One is Completed. I did that with Drea Kaufman. It's called Owl Post. We talked about every single chapter of the Harry Potter series, one chapter at a time. And then doing aggressive negotiations with John Mills as we talk about Star Wars each and every week. But, Chris, where can everybody find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network, as you mentioned, doing all those shows with you. Also, Larry Nemechek and I do The Ready Room from time to time, and we published a new episode recently about the state of the franchise in 2022, so check that out. And then you can find me in social media. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. That's my username everywhere, but Twitter is where I'm most active, and I'd love to hear from you there. And if you would like to help us keep The Orb and everything else that we mentioned, all these shows in the network going, we could definitely use your help to find out how to get involved and support the network. Just visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm. And we would not be here without the support of all of you listening. So thank you so much to everyone who's supporting us now. And if you're not, we do hope that you'll consider doing so. So thank you very, very much. Well, Matthew, next time we open an orb, I hope that someone a little bit less sinister and creepy comes out than Gul Dukat.
Chris, I do as well. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And we will see you next time as we gaze into the orb.